fewer and fewer people are going to be able to afford to be in this game.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's ultimately a bad thing. Like our industry boomed, you know, like 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And a lot of people got into it. And I think if it contracts a bit, not that it won't suck, not that it won't be hard, but the people who really know how to do right by the whole supply chain and produce a truly excellent luxury product, because let's be real, lots of stuff is being passed off as specialty because of gold-plated espresso machines or really nice branding. That's like not that good.
This episode is proudly brought to you by Mapper Forward's workshop, It's Time to Become a Coffee Consultant. Learn how to diversify your revenue streams and create freedom from your day job while saying goodbye to that alarm clock forever by becoming a consultant within the coffee industry or directly to consumers who have shifted towards home brewing and home roasting. Protect your income from challenging times in the coffee value chain by taking this course today. Go to mapperforward.coffee/workshops or click the link in the show notes for details.
Welcome to the Daily Coffee Pro by Mapper Forward, friends. I'm your host, Lee Safar, and this is episode 4 of a 5-part series with Spencer Perez, an espresso machine technician. And we are talking about espresso techs around the world and this kind of I feel like you guys are in your Renaissance era. You guys are trying to organize and create a kind of a movement, if I'm understanding it correctly. Is that right, Spencer?
It feels that way. It feels historical.
In what way?
I mean, so at the expo in 2023,
mm-hmm.
after having talked for many months on a Discord server that a couple technicians started, we had like 15 of the best technicians in the country sitting at a bar having a beer talking about the state of the trade, the state of the industry. I don't know if a meeting like that had ever happened before.
Okay.
And that was that wasn't the beginning, but it was a very pivotal moment in us continuing to try to collaborate and talk about how to elevate the trade. And so we were fortunate in 2024 in Chicago to sort of have a booth fall into our laps about a month and a half before the show.
Mm-hmm.
And so we scrambled to put a booth together, and it was like wildly successful. It was awesome. We rebuilt an old Linea Classic,
mm-hmm.
Frame up, total rebuild, live on mm-hmm. the show floor, and we just spent time interfacing with stakeholders, roasters, cafe owners, equipment manufacturers, talking about, you know, what we want to advocate for as the service layer, as this new breed of specialty focused technicians.
I guess when you say you want to kind of make it clear what you advocate for, I'm confused whether you guys are advocating for the client or whether you're advocating for the equipment manufacturers.
I think like we're advocating for neither. Like we're advocating for technicians.
Okay.
We're advocating for the value that this trade brings to the industry. I think we feel that historically technicians have been undervalued.
Mm-hmm.
We're incredibly valued when you have a problem at 6 p.m. and we have to leave our families to come and unclog your dirty steam wand tip.
Because you make scrambled eggs with it.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, oh, my machine's broken. I need you here right now. But then when it comes time to pay the $100 bill, you drag your feet and it takes you 45 is to pay us. Like, so like, you, incredibly valuable to the industry, not just in terms of the skills that we bring to the cafe when it comes to working on the equipment, but also, again, this network that we have developed. So like, each technician serving a local economy is very well networked in that local economy. But now, with the advent of Service Layer, we're cooperating with each other to help build resources and networks across the country. Mm-hmm. And so technicians who are a part of this movement have access to a wealth of knowledge and experience that is like far beyond anything we could generate at the local level. There's so many people in that group who know so much more than I do about so many different domains. Mm-hmm. And we are just so excited to share that stuff with each other. And it is elevating the trade, even though there's nothing formal really right now. Like, we're all getting better because of it, you know?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And I guess in this episode, we're going to talk about the insights that espresso technicians can really kind of give us into the coffee crisis. And now we're going to talk about a golden espresso machine, because this coffee crisis, I think it was even when you and I spoke, when we had the preliminary conversation ahead of this, when we started talking about coffee crisis, there's a few people who are like, well, but what do you mean coffee crisis? Like, is there really, what specifically do you mean? And there is a lot of things going on many, many layers, which is why we're calling it a coffee crisis. And yes, it was me that started the term and started calling it a coffee crisis, because to be clear, folks, what do I mean by a coffee crisis? Well, our cafes are making next to no money before inflation was a problem, and now they're definitely making no money. And coffee roasters are finding it very difficult to access credit, the credit that they need to carry the coffee that they want. So now all they can afford to buy is spot coffee between an 81 and an 84. And now there's no spot coffee left. And so roasteries are closing all over the world because they can't afford to buy green coffee, and their businesses are going until that happens. Consumers are having a real problem understanding why their coffee doesn't taste quite like it used to. And the reason it doesn't taste quite like it used to is because the top four coffee producers in the world are all experiencing significant levels of drought over the last couple of years. And the drought is impacting the way all that coffee is tasting. And those droughts are contributing to a decrease in yield. And that decrease in yield means that there's not so much of a supply. They're also, not only is climate having a problem for these guys, but also they have no access to labor, or next to no access to labor, and which is a problem particularly for specialty coffee. And on top of that, they're not getting paid quickly enough they've never been quite paid quickly enough by roasters. But now it's even worse because the roasters can't afford the funding to be able to pay. And that is just like 5% of the problems of what's going on in coffee right now. So we are in crisis. And I think we being Mapper Forward really started to call it a crisis when I saw that golden espresso machine being paraded at Expo in Chicago. And look, it's not about Mevam, right? Mevam is just doing what espresso manufacturers do. And it's no secret that I have I'm not a fan of marketers, right? Because I feel like they're trying to manipulate and trick people, which is their job. They're paid to do that, to convince you to buy things that you don't really need, so that, you know, it's the worst kind of capitalism that exists. And our industry is in crisis. And from an espresso tech's perspective, I'd love to understand what you guys think of, and I know that you can't speak on everyone, but you kind of are here representing that whole Discord group. What do you guys think of a golden espresso machine?
I'm trying to think back to like some of the conversation. That conversation around it died out pretty quickly after we saw it. I think we're all kind of like, you know, like, I think I, you know, I think
that's not what I heard, just to be very clear.
Okay. There was some hot dialogue for like a few days, and then it, I think we moved on. But, what do we think about the golden espresso machine? It's, you know, on the one hand, I think it could be viewed as a piece of art if it's a one-off. Some of us like to, when we refurbish machines, for example, do some pretty cool paint jobs, and they're flashy. They don't bring any added function to the machine, but they're beautiful, and that's cool. I don't know, are Mavam, are they like mass producing these machines?
No, but I'm not sure that's relevant.
Is it a one-off?
Like, okay. I think it was a one-off, and after all the issues started coming up after our post went viral, then you know, people started saying, but it was a tribute to somebody.
Okay.
My big problem is, folks, and I've said it back when we were talking about it, it's gaudy. At a time when coffee producers can't get paid above the cost of production, and at a time when cafes know that they're about to go out of business.
Sure, sure, sure.
Doing something like that is gaudy.
I think, like, that's one way to look at it, and mm-hmm. I can understand that perspective, and I might even take that perspective, you know? At the same time, the whole expo is gaudy.
Word.
Like, you know, like you have the whole thing is a pageant.
Yeah.
So if you're going to engage in pageantry, put on some good makeup, you know, like, I don't know. I don't know enough about Mavam, their intentions, their motivations to really have any kind of a strong opinion about it beyond, like, I don't think in a time where we are in crisis, I still think that we need art. And I can't speak to, I'm not saying how I feel about that particular machine. I wouldn't put it in my cafe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if it was for sale, you know? So was it? It was actually gold plated, wasn't it? Was that actual gold?
Yeah, it was gold. I don't know if it was plated or not. But again, besides the point, right? And it's not even about Mavam. And I don't want anyone to be like, Mavam's this horrible, horrible thing.
No,
it's not about that. It's about, there was also a Barbie espresso machine that apparently was all of it, right? Like,
yeah.
At the end of the day, it's really fucking hard for us to give producers a reason to stay in business when people are coming to them and saying, hey, listen, there's this other cash crop you could be growing.
Yeah.
And you'll get paid much quicker, and you'll get paid more, and you'll get paid in USD. If you grow this, fuck coffee. And and coffee is one of those crops where there's a different kind of love for it. It's not like growing broccoli, right? You don't get your broccoli producer having this emotional connection with this romantic thing called coffee that happens in another country, right? Coffee producers are aware that once they make that decision to pull up their coffee trees, if they ever want to get that coffee back in the ground again, it's another 3 years before that tree, they end up getting fruit from it again. It's a big decision.
Totally.
But we are not giving them enough reasons to want to stay in coffee. And that's what a golden espresso machine represents to me.
Yes. But I think that's the key. That's what it represents to you. Like, we confer meaning to things.
Mm-hmm.
Symbols are created in our hearts and in our minds.
Mm-hmm.
And so Yeah, I think it's a, you know, on it, and it depends on where they are, right? Like art or symbols or whatever viewed in certain contexts can change their meaning. So like in a cafe, maybe that machine is like totally ostentatious. In a museum, it feels very different. And I don't know. I think like getting too hung up on that as a symbol for the larger issue, which sure is the coffee crisis, but really the coffee crisis is a human crisis. Like it goes way beyond coffee.
Right. But I don't want us to, you know, every time somebody says that, we water down the fact that the crisis that we're tasked with addressing as an industry is the coffee crisis. The world is a clusterfuck right now. We all recognize that. The crisis that's being experienced in coffee is what we are responsible for creating, as well as responsible for addressing and hopefully finding a way out of it. Because one very viable option in this is that coffee becomes a luxury item that is only drunk by the few. Sure. And while people tell me that that's a ridiculous notion, I guarantee you, I speak to many, many coffee producers every week, and they are at the point where they're saying, fuck this, the consuming end doesn't deserve what we've got. And so the only people who will be selling the coffee side of things are the big corporations, the conglomerates who own their farms and are monocropping coffee, and they will continue to be able to sell coffee. Coffee shops may end up running out. That is a viable option for us in this situation, folks. So if we turn around and we say, well, you know, the world's fucked up right now, so, you know, the coffee crisis is just a small part of that. I don't want us to give ourselves that pass, because we can find a solution for this if we work together about it.
I don't think the solution comes from big business. I don't think the solution comes from tech startups. I think the solution is a local one. It's relational. It involves local economies, understanding that coffee, specialty coffee, the coffee that we're talking about, anything that cups above really a 75 is a luxury item. It's an addictive drug. It is not necessary to our survival. We love it. We enjoy it. For some of us, it's all we know, but it is a luxury product. And I think at some point we got it in our heads that really, really high-grade specialty coffee should be democratic. And I don't know if I feel that way anymore. I think I used to. But, like, coffee, writ large, will continue to be widely available. The coffee that we really enjoy drinking is going to become scarcer and scarcer and more of a luxury item. But I don't know the path to getting incentivizing producers to continue producing high-grade specialty coffee, other than roasters need to charge more for their coffee. Because everybody, it's not just producers, it's all the producers. It's not just the farmers, it's the baristas, it's the custodians, it's the, you know, like it's the technicians, it's the roasters. I know plenty of roasters who own roasteries and have for 10 years and aren't doing very well.
It's all over the world,
you know,
all over the world.
So like, we got this idea that specialty coffee should be like affordable to everybody. And like, I don't know why we feel that way. Like it's an incredibly labor intensive, expensive product to produce. So like, for example, I just visited a producer called Forgotten Forest in Puerto Rico. He is doing a ton for the local Puerto Rican coffee economy. One of the reasons of many that we haven't seen Puerto Rican coffee on spot lists in the United States from big importers is that they have to pay U.S. federal minimum wages to anyone who touches that coffee, right?
Yeah.
Not the case anywhere else.
So Hawaii, I bought a bag. So, you know.
Okay, yeah, Hawaii. Yeah. Sorry. Yes, absolutely. So, and Puerto Rico, this is an aside, but Puerto Rico is plagued by all of the same false branding bullshit that Hawaii Kona coffee is, right? Like, you buy Bustelo or Cafe Jalco or whatever, and most of the coffee in that bag is imported from the Dominican Republic.
Mm.
So, and most of the coffee consumed in Puerto Rico is from the Dominican Republic. 31 million pounds roughly consumed mm-hmm. in Puerto Rico annually. 28 roughly of that is imported.
Wow.
So Domenico at Forgotten Forest is doing a ton of work to try to help rebuild Puerto Rico's coffee economy and how much coffee is how much Puerto Rican coffee is consumed by Puerto Ricans living there. Anyway, where am I going with that? He sold me a bag, an 8-ounce bag of coffee for $30. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's like, obviously that's a lot of money for an 8-ounce bag of coffee, but he's selling that 8-ounce bag of coffee for $30 all of the time. Mm-hmm. And he's just doing it, right? He just said, this is what I have to charge for this coffee, and it's selling. And so it's like, the coffee was really good, don't get me wrong. But there's tons of coffee that's as good that I pay $13 for an 8-ounce bag or less. Okay. So like a lot of going back to your point, like fewer and fewer people are going to be able to afford to be in this game.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's ultimately a bad thing. Like our industry boomed, you know, like 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And it got, and a lot of people got into it. And I think if it contracts a bit, not that it won't suck, not that it won't be hard, but the people who really know how to do right by the whole supply chain and produce a truly excellent luxury product, because let's be real, lots of stuff is being passed off as specialty because of gold-plated espresso machines
yeah.
or really nice branding. That's like not that good.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about like 79, 80 point coffees that people are trying to sell for $16.
Yeah. But it's commercial coffee.
An 8 or 10. It's commercial. So like, let's make specialty coffee quite specialty, you know, and like just charge what you need to charge for it. And yeah, you're going to lose some customers and you might have to rethink your business model. But like you said, Lee, if we don't figure out, I think like part of the solution to the coffee crisis is that the people who are adaptable are going to
survive,
make
They'll
it through,
adapt. Yeah.
You know, I think if you try to take old modes of thinking and old modes of doing business and old modes of valuing stakeholders in your local economy and try to bring that into the future, you're going to fail. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of people that probably should fail, who should learn those lessons the hard way.
Word. Peace, love, and peanut butter. Have an amazing rest of your day, folks. Join us for the next episode.
I really hope you enjoyed this episode, friends. Please don't forget to show us some love by subscribing, liking, commenting, and most of all, sharing this podcast with your friends. Check the show notes for links, including our sponsors and our Patreon. And stay tuned for more great conversations on The Daily Coffee Pro by Mapper Forward.